You are Locked On Bears, your daily Chicago Bears podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
We thought last year was going to be Anthony Miller's breakout season, but the Bears wide receiver coach explained what went wrong and why he thinks 2020 will be different. Welcome into the Locked On Bears podcast. I'm your host, Lauren Cox. I'm here to bring you your daily Chicago Bears news and analysis. Today, we will explore what held Anthony Miller back in 2019 and what wide receivers coach Mike Furry sees as the difference that changed about halfway through last year that should carry over into this year. Plus, we'll take a look at what the Chicago Bears can learn from other teams and other sports when it comes to COVID-19 prevention and mitigation. And we'll wrap up with Eddie Jackson's plea to play more snaps on offense and look at the possibility of maybe more two-way players this year because of COVID-19. Fool me once, Anthony Miller, shame on you. Fool me twice, it'll be shame on wide receivers coach Mike Furry, who's working to develop the Bears' second-round pick into a well-rounded receiver threat. And we've seen flashes of it from Anthony Miller, some moments of borderline elite wide receiver play, where he not only looks like a number two, but looks like a dynamic weapon that could really do some damage in any offense. And then we've seen stretches of his career where he really disappears, and there's some drop passes in there, some miscommunications, and he just goes kind of non-existent. That was really the story for the first half of his 2019 season. It felt like he wasn't really a big part of the offense for the first, really, what, 7 or 8 games? I mean, the first 3 games of the season, he had 2 catches. Then, you know, we get to be about week seven, right after the bye week, he has a decent game against the New Orleans Saints, and then kind of trails off again until we get to like weeks 11 through 17, when he really exploded onto the scene. Huge game against the Lions, huge game against the Green Bay Packers, both going over 110 yards in each game, and it kind of felt like, okay, this is going to be it for Anthony Miller, and then the last couple of games kind of fizzled out a little bit. But the Bears receivers coach, Mike Furry, did not hold back in terms of explaining what happened with Miller last season and what needs to be more consistent in 2020. I'll read Furry's quote for you verbatim. Quote, "I just don't think from a maturity standpoint, a preparation standpoint, that Anthony probably was 100% all in. I think he still had that college mentality, that ability was going to be able to allow him to overcome whatever he wanted to overcome in games. Talent can only get you so far when you get to the pros. You've got to start learning the details of what you're supposed to do. The quarterback's got to trust where you're supposed to be. I just think he was really lacking in those areas. You go back to that Packers game, sitting there thinking one of our best players isn't on the field. The reason why is because you can't trust him. I think that light went off for Anthony toward the latter half of the season." End quote. It's not very often you hear a position coach come out and say that we couldn't trust a specific player. You think back to that week one game against the Packers. I think Miller had 1 target, 0 catches in that contest, and that trust really didn't start building up until that second half of the season, when evidently his mentality, his mindset, his preparation all started to sort of grow in the direction that the Bears wanted to see. And it's got to be a continuous growth process. He's got to be able to prepare the same way each week and all offseason and each year of his career. It can't just be a one-time thing to get back on track and then revert back to just relying on talent and not the same preparation, because that's what separates the guys like Akiem Hicks, like Khalil Mack, or like we talked about yesterday, Eddie Jackson, talking about film work and preparation really being the key to his instincts. It is going to be critical for Anthony Miller to keep that up from week to week and year to year. The follow-up quote from Mike Furry was, quote, "From a maturity standpoint, from a development standpoint of being a pro, those are things he's working on. This is the first year I can actually sense there's an intent there. He gets it," end quote. And so it's really going to be a question of sustaining that intent and sustaining that understanding and putting that understanding into action, that you know, I think last season Anthony Miller could see the direct results of his actions versus the direct results of his inactions. That maybe it was the sort of wake-up call where he sees, see, if I don't prepare enough and I'm not deep enough in the playbook and understanding, then you get the early season slump that we saw to start the year. But then later in the season, when the preparation and understanding was there, was when the production stepped up. So it should be a strong enough correlation for him and this Bears coaching staff for the message to really be hammered home through, that he can be as successful as he wants to be, and as much effort as he puts in will carry him to those next steps. Obviously, COVID-19 and everything else going on this season could throw some wrenches in his path here, but I think from his standpoint, what he needs to do does not change, whether it's a normal regular season or a completely strange regular season. His task, his goal, and his accomplishments should still be the exact same. I'm excited to see how it translates to the field this season, and hopefully we'll get to see a lot of Anthony Miller, but with COVID-19 and everything else going on, there's always the potential for things to be derailed quickly. And I think the Chicago Bears can look around at some of the other sports and teams that are getting a head start and take some lessons away from them that they can apply to their own team to try and keep them as intact as possible moving forward. We'll take a closer look at what we're seeing in baseball, basketball, and even college football to see how we can't apply that to Matt Nagy's squad. Keep it locked right here on Locked On Bears. Even as the other three major sports are back on television playing some really entertaining games, I mean, NHL is already doing their playoffs, NBA is about to enter their playoffs from the bubble, and baseball is back doing baseball things, it was still the college football players that really, I thought, dominated the sports headlines and the sports conversation in the recent days in their discussions on whether or not to play, and specifically the college football players trying to unite and demand the ability to play football, among other things, including a lot of very specific protocols and even a college football players union, which is a very understandably a huge potential turning point in college football history. But it's funny how football really is king, even with all these other sports very far ahead of them. But even college football feels a little bit ahead of the NFL because it does start earlier in terms of the regular season. And, you know, they're a little bit farther ahead as conferences are now looking at not playing at all. You know, there's talk about the Big Ten either canceling or pushing it back. We saw the Mid-American Conference, the MAC, canceled its, or I guess postponed its fall season officially, and some other conferences are having a lot of these same discussions. And I think one of the most interesting points here was came in a story that ESPN put out just yesterday about this idea of the long-term effects of COVID-19, particularly a heart condition that's linked with the coronavirus. It's called myocarditis. It's inflammation of the heart muscle, and apparently at least 5 Big Ten athletes and many other athletes across the country have found this heart disease as a result of having COVID-19. It's caused by a viral infection that can be caused by other things in addition to COVID-19. It's rare, but it's been at a higher frequency with this disease. And so you have a lot of college officials really being afraid of these young players catching the disease and being able to, you know, have long-term effects on them, especially at such a young age, and players not being paid, of course, for any of their performances. So as you kind of apply that to the NFL, you can't help but wonder, you know, how well-informed everyone, even everyone in the world, but especially NFL players that had an opt-out deadline that has come and passed, how well do all these players really know about COVID-19, and how much research did they do about their risks and about the potential long-term effects? Obviously, the Bears can kind of come to them and say, here's all the different things we're doing to help keep you safe, and that is all well and good, but I just wonder if, just given how little concrete information it seems that any of us have on COVID-19, this long-term heart disease stuff is pretty brand new in terms of the science and the study of this, because COVID-19 just hasn't been around long enough to be able to have a length of time after someone's been infected to study this and really figure this out. And, you know, the article and the doctors say this myocardial inflammation can also be somewhat asymptomatic as well, that you can get it and feel fine and not really know it. But sometimes heavy physical activity, like a sport like this, can increase the inflammation, can cause some scar tissue on the heart and put somebody at risk for cardiac arrest and irregular heartbeat and stroke, I think, is one of the things in there. Just, you never want to mess with your heart, right? I mean, especially athletes playing at the highest level. And so it's a tricky situation for everyone to be in, but the Bears are more or less locked in with who they have right now. And they're really putting the emphasis on personal responsibility, and I think they had a personal responsibility to research COVID-19 as best as they could before they made their decision, but they also have a personal responsibility not to put the rest of their teammates at risk by taking risky behaviors themselves. And I can't help but look to the MLB, where the Cleveland Indians have had, I think, two players essentially kicked off of the team, sent home and quarantined for being irresponsible in terms of going out to, I don't know if they were all bars or clubs or hang out with people, and basically sort of violating their protocol in terms of not wanting to have players risk exposure. It's happened twice with just the Cleveland Indians alone, and you can't help but wonder if every team in every sport is looking at those two Indian players in that situation and saying, okay, use that as a reminder to all of your players and say, hey, if you do this, this is what's going to happen. And I'd be curious to ask Matt Nagy, if we had the opportunity, what the punishment would be if they found out that a player was out at a downtown Chicago club or bar. And I don't even know what the city of Chicago is allowing to be open, but there's still opportunities to gather in unsafe public ways, especially for a football player that probably shouldn't be gathering in any type of way with people. You know, if you're playing in the NFL and you've got millions of dollars on the line and your health and safety of your teammates and everything, I would imagine the teams could temporarily suspend their own players for a violation of team rules or conduct detrimental to the team by being out in public in that sort of a situation, because that's going to be what separates the healthy teams from the unhealthy teams, is how responsible those players are. And the less COVID-19 that can impact your organization, the better shape you're going to be this season, because some teams are going to get hurt with it more than others, and it's going to create a disparity and an imbalance in power in the league, and it may be more of a war of attrition than it is of pure talent. And so the Bears have to be strict on that, and their players have to be responsible, and they can't be as reckless as those two players so far from the Cleveland Indians. It makes you wonder if they'll think harder about creating their own type of bubble, like we've seen the New Orleans Saints and Tampa Bay Buccaneers discuss doing, where they just rent out an entire hotel for their team and don't really let anyone else in or out, so the players go straight from practice to the hotel and back and forth. They're separated from their families the same way we're seeing the NBA do at Disney and the NHL do with a couple of hub cities. I think it's basically a split bubble with two bubbles. And so far, they've been, I think, perfect in their COVID-19 testing. I don't think anybody that's entered the bubble in either sport has tested positive for the disease since entering the bubble. They haven't had the COVID-19 penetrate that bubble as of yet. And it's likely that eventually they'll get one or two cases here and there, and we'll see long-term how effective that solution is. But for the short-term, it's been effective for both of those leagues. And I would think if I'm an NFL organization, I'm doing absolutely everything in my power to limit COVID-19 on my franchise, and I would absolutely sign up for any kind of bubble I could create, whether it's a hotel like that, or if you could, you know, get a dorm on a college campus that's not going to be open, you know, almost like Olivet Nazarene University, where they do training camp. I don't know what ONU's fall semester plan is, but that sort of thing. I don't know, DePaul or Northwestern or however the Chicago area colleges are going to handle it. Some place where you can have the players in a very controlled environment, not just at Hallis Hall where they work, but somewhere where they sleep and eat and stay and can be more or less monitored, or at least contained and limited in their exposure to the outside world. Fortunately, we've been getting some pretty good exposure to Bears players via video conferencing and calls in that way. And Eddie Jackson was a guest on NFL Network and spoke to some of his desires to play on offense. So I want to look through not only what Eddie Jackson can do and has done on this Bears offense, but a little bit more deeply into this possibility of maybe some more two-way players with COVID-19 threatening every team's depth. We'll have a little fun with that idea next
on Locked On Bears.
Part of what made the 2018 Bears so much fun were all the different trick plays Matt Nagy mixed in with the Bears offense, particularly in the red zone and up on the goal line. And it wasn't always completely wild and crazy. Sometimes it's as simple as Tariq Cohen doing a halfback pass, but it really got, I think, a lot of attention when he brought the defensive players onto the field. We saw Khalil Mack at one point line up on offense. Akeem Hicks had a rushing touchdown. We saw Roy Robertson-Harris run routes, even though he wasn't actually thrown to, but he lined up at tight end like he did in high school and was, you know, an eligible receiver on a play. And so it's not a surprise that a player like Eddie Jackson wants to get back to doing some of that after at least getting a little taste in 2018. And then it really wasn't a part of the offense last season. But Jackson was a guest on NFL Network's Good Morning Football this week and shared some of his desires with a direct plea to Matt Nagy through the television.
Before you showed up at Alabama, you were a wide receiver in high school. I also know that you were on record at the pro level that's saying you would like to play some offense as well. Now, the Bears have seen, of course, Refrigerator Perry catch a touchdown, run for one. They've seen Brian Urlacher catch a touchdown. Here's the deal, Adi. We want to make this happen. I know Matt Nagy watches the show. We all know it. He's probably in his office on the bike watching right now. So speak to the camera, speak to Coach, and tell Coach why there should be offensive plays, if not packages, for Eddie Jackson this fall.
I'm going to be telling you, which I feel like Coach Nagy knows that already. So right now, Coach, you know I've been asking you since I walked in the building, since you walked in the building. All I need is two or three plays, Coach. Just two or three plays. We put a little package in there. You know, get a little disguise, throw Mackie in there, Akeem in there. You know, I just, like I said, it's just an opportunity. If I mess it up, you don't got to put me in there. You can take all the packages out, but I doubt it.
Again, that audio courtesy of NFL Network's Good Morning Football. And Eddie Jackson knows, you know, he can talk to Matt Nagy about that and has, I'm sure, talked to Matt Nagy about getting in on offense a little bit. And, you know, some of it is tongue-in-cheek, and some of it is serious, too. I mean, he is a football player. He is a competitor, a guy who loves the game and has played receiver before. So he genuinely wants to play offense, but certainly is understanding that he's not going to be a full-time two-way player. I did go back and look just to double-check, and in 2018, he got two snaps on offense. It was against the Buffalo Bills in Week 9. He lined up as the slot receiver, and the Bears ended up running the ball on that play. And then in Week 13 against the New York Giants, he was out at an outside wide receiver, but was kind of more of a decoy on the play. It wasn't really an option for the throw directly to him. So neither one was quite the excitement and action and focal point, perhaps, that Eddie Jackson would like to be. But the whole concept got me thinking about COVID-19 and this Bears team. And if we start to see outbreaks in the NFL, I imagine realistically, if teams had more than a handful of players or even a handful of players test positive, we could see games start to be canceled or interrupted or delayed or postponed in some way, shape, or form. But I think it's fun to kind of think about, well, you know, if, say, Allen Robinson, this is all hypothetical, and hopefully, in all these cases, let's hope it's all minor, but it's enough that they just have to be separated from the team, but none of it's going to be severe symptoms or anything long-term on these players. But let's say Allen Robinson, you know, gets COVID-19, and maybe, you know, somebody like Riley Ridley or Javon Wims suffers a regular injury, and you're down a couple of your top wide receivers. It would be tempting to get a guy like Eddie Jackson in there. You know, somebody that you already feel really confident about what they're doing in their normal job. You know, Eddie Jackson, you can take him and have him do some more stuff on offense, and I don't think you're going to lose much from him on defense. You know, you don't want to take a young guy or somebody who's still learning the position or even a veteran that might not have a lot left in the tank. You know, like you wouldn't take Jalen Johnson, the second-round pick, and make him do too much. And maybe not even Tashaun Gibson, the safety, just because, you know, he's past 30, you know, on the over the hill a little bit in terms of the NFL, and you don't want to put too much on his plate and wear him out over the course of a game. But a guy like Eddie Jackson, maybe even Kyle Fuller too, but Jackson has more of the physical skill set. He's in that sweet spot of being really, really good at his craft, elite instincts and coverage ability on the back end, but also having the speed, the background, the hands, the understanding to play some wide receiver. You know, he couldn't step in and play a full game. He can't be one of your starters on the outside, but he's got to learn you would have to learn the packages and the timing of the quarterback. There's a lot of difficult things that go to that. But could you make him a little bit of a gadget player for your offense in some of the same ways that you do with Cordarrelle Patterson? You know, work up a set of plays or a package kind of like Jackson was talking about there in his plea for Matt Nagy. That's the kind of thing that, again, worst case scenario, you know, you could do worse than having to put Eddie Jackson in one of those situations on offense. And you can take it the other direction too. You know, with the Bears already being a little bit thinner on the defensive line with Eddie Goldman opting out, say, you know, another player or two goes down, whether it's a regular injury or COVID-19, you've got a guy on your offensive line, Rashad Coward, who played defensive line for his entire college career at Old Dominion, hasn't played D-line in the NFL for a couple of seasons, but it's not like he's that far removed from being a nose tackle. And if you're down to some undrafted rookie free agents for whatever reason, if John Jenkins is out of the picture at some point, that could be a possibility. You know, if Jermaine Ifedi wins your starting right guard competition, you're not going to permanently move Rashad Coward back to defensive line, but if push came to shove and you're dealing with some depth issues and struggling to get the right people in from outside the team because they have to quarantine or whatever situation, I could envision a scenario where you'd have some incentive to bump Rashad Coward back to their side just as sort of an emergency type player. Or even, you know, Roy Robertson-Harris, like we said, you know, he played a little bit of tight end in his high school days, lined up at tight end in the Bears offensive packages a couple times in the red zone last year. Could you put him in there for some more packages? Again, you tell him a simple route or a simple block to execute, he's not going to do it at the level of a regular NFL tight end, but he has the raw physical tools certainly and has some background behind it. It's not that complicated to do it for a player too. It's complicated to do it at an elite level, and it's not something you want to have to rely on consistently. But I do think the Bears have some options when it comes to potentially versatile guys. Maybe that's the one area that the Bears will actually miss having Trey Burton, because he was always an option as an emergency quarterback, having played quarterback and, of course, throwing a super significant touchdown on the Philly Special in the Super Bowl as well. We know Nick Foles could probably play some wide receiver if the Bears were in a pinch, given he could catch that one trick play Philly Special. Maybe not a full-time wide receiver at this point for Nick Foles. Not quite the athlete there, but it's fun to think about. Maybe Tariq Cohen is now your emergency quarterback after Tyler Bray, because he's throwing some passes in NFL games. Hopefully it never comes to any of that, but it's contingency plans in a strange season where I don't think we can take anything off the table at this point. No one knows what's going to happen next, so all we can do is try and follow along as close as we can and maybe not get our hopes too high for anything in particular to avoid being disappointed in the end. But the best way to keep up with all of this rapidly changing NFL landscape is to subscribe to the Locked On Bears podcast so you're keeping up with all of our daily Chicago Bears news and analysis. We're getting closer to real-looking football practice is starting up at Bears training camp, so we'll bring you updates as soon as we can in that area. And before you know it, they'll all be ready to bear down.